You're listening to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast, where we look to inform about our upcoming events and give insight to behind-the-scenes happenings at the RSO.
Hello, everyone. My name is Javier Roman. I am the Marketing and Engagement Manager with the Rockford Symphony Orchestra, and today I'm sitting down with Mike Beard, the principal cellist with the Rockford Symphony Orchestra. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. Thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing well as well.
Good. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course. Thank you for coming in. So we thought it'd be good to get your perspective on this concert, just because you're very involved with a lot of the activities happening, and also because we have a special cello soloist as well. So we thought you'd be a natural fit to talk about this. But we'll get to that. So we're talking about the concert Hope and Heroism on November 15th at 7:30 p.m. in the Coronado Theater. So first off, we wanted to hear a little bit from our music director, Yaniv Attar, about some of the pieces and why were they programmed the way they were and how it all ties into this theme of hope and heroism.
This concert is one that is very close to my heart and maybe the one I have been most looking forward to this season. We open with the work of the young American composer, Jonathan Leshnoff, Elegy. It's a work I commissioned from him a few years ago. It's written in memory of Holocaust victims, but rather than being dark or tragic, it ends with a sense of hope, which is a strong reminder, I think, for all of us that resilience of the human spirit, even in the face of unimaginable loss. From there, we move to Sharon Farber's Bestemming, a concerto for cello and narrator. Bestemming means destiny. In itself, it's a very unusual combination, right? Cello and a narrator. So the concerto tells the extraordinary story of Kurt Lowenz. As a child, Kurt fled Germany during Kristallnacht, and he went into hiding on a farm in Holland. And during the war, he not only saved the lives of many Jewish children, but he also rescued an American pilot whose plane had been shot down near his farm. And for his bravery, he was later honored, and it was this very story that inspired Sharon Farber to write this remarkable piece. Kurt eventually immigrated to the United States, and he went on and had a very successful career as an actor. But I think his real legacy lies in his courage and humanity, no doubt. And then, to honor his heroism and spirit, we close the program with Beethoven's Eroica Symphony, his monumental Third Symphony, and I have to say, my favorite symphony in the entire symphonic repertoire. Beethoven originally dedicated it to Napoleon, admiring Napoleon as a symbol of freedom and heroism, but when Napoleon betrayed those ideas and declared himself emperor, Beethoven famously tore up the dedication and instead he titled the symphony Eroica, meaning heroic. And he wrote in his own words, "To the memory of a great man." So I can't think of a more fitting tribute to someone like Kurt Lowenz, whose life really embodied both hope and heroism. And Beethoven's Third Symphony was really revolutionary. It broke the boundaries of any symphony in length, in structure, and I think even more than anything else, in emotional scope. It's the moment where Beethoven truly redefined what a symphony could be. So no longer, you know, light entertainment, but a profound human statement. Symphony, as people knew it back then, was never the same again after that. So this will be an incredible way to close this very powerful and moving concert.
Yeah, so let's start by talking about the Beethoven, because I know that's a big part of this concert, and I know Yaniv is very excited for it. I think he's described it as the perfect symphony for him. So what are your thoughts on the Beethoven? I'm sure you've performed it many of times.
I think I have performed it four times in the past. It is an extremely long work, but at the same time, always exciting, exhilarating. There's something new around every corner. The typical symphony up to this time was usually about 20 to 25 minutes, and it was written usually as an entertainment piece for a specific occasion. And with Beethoven, what we have here is a piece that is more than twice the length of a standard Mozart or Haydn symphony. And the symphony lasts approximately over 40 minutes. The purpose for this symphony was Beethoven was struggling with his deafness. And he kept it from a lot of people and didn't really let anybody know. And he wrote a letter to his brothers in 1802, but then he never mailed it or published it. And it was written in the suburb of Vienna called Heiligenstadt. And so this letter is now called the Heiligenstadt Testimony. And what he did was bury it in a secret drawer in his writing desk. And it was discovered after his death. And it really describes the turmoil that Beethoven was dealing with at this time, saying things like, "Do you know how it feels to have the person next to me talking about how the birds are singing or how this sound is happening or this event is happening, and I can't respond because I can't hear it?" So he was becoming very despondent and to the point of suicide. And instead, something happens, and in this letter, he talks to his brothers about turning this struggle into new creativity. And so the Third Symphony is this first work following the Heiligenstadt Testimony, where he does double down and he says, "I'm going to take everything that is inside of me and make something new out of it." And so this Third Symphony is really, yes, it's dedicated to the memory of a great man, and at one time it was dedicated to Napoleon, but many people believe that it's an autobiographical work about Beethoven.
Wow. That in itself is a great story of resilience,
well,
I think.
Well, it is. And so the arc of this whole concert is wonderful in that sense. Before we talk about the other pieces, to finish up with the Beethoven, each movement can also be depicted as a possible story. The first movement is the struggle of the artist or the struggle of the everyman. The second movement is the demon, the power that has to be overcome. It is a funeral march. And at no time prior to this was there ever a funeral march in a symphony. Now, he was inspired by Gossec, who was a French composer during the Revolutionary War period, where he writes a movement entitled Marche Funèbre, Funeral March. And Beethoven looks at this as, wow, slow movement. Let's create the image of a cortege or a funeral march in sound. And it's just an amazing work, just the second movement. And not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but there is another work that was inspired by this movement. In 1948, Richard Strauss wrote a piece called Metamorphosen, or Changes. And at the very end of it, Strauss surprises us and gives us the theme from this Beethoven funeral march. At the very end, it's like, oh, wow, that's what this whole Metamorphosen piece is based on. And that, yeah. So that is like 145 years after Beethoven. So that's how strong Beethoven's influence is.
Yeah, especially with that movement. I know I was reading that particular movement has been used as a funeral processional music for past presidents of the United States.
Really?
Yeah, I believe it was Franklin Roosevelt.
Okay.
There was one more. There was at least two presidents that they used that movement.
Okay.
For their funeral procession.
Wow.
Yeah.
So even beyond 145 years.
Yes, we're still
relevant. Tipping our hat to Beethoven.
Exactly.
Yeah. The third movement of the symphony is a fast, light scherzo. And to me, what that always represents is it's the verb in the sentence. It is the action in which the hero, Beethoven, Napoleon, whoever, is doing to overcome that darkness. The trio of that scherzo uses a third French horn, and that's something a little bit new for Beethoven. Up to that time, it was usually just two French horns. The trio is very easy to hear because the three French horns come in with a very heroic kind of sound. And many people believe that that was a tip of the hat to Napoleon. We're not sure.
Yeah.
Again, all of this is speculative and all of this is
storytelling.
Yeah. In a sense. But it's still, there is that belief that there is some kind of hidden program in this work. And critics and music historians will go, oh, no, it's not. And many will go, oh, yes, it is. And so it's one of those things that we just don't know.
Yeah.
But it's fun to think about and it's fun to listen to and go, yeah, I can see that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Again, the idea of Beethoven and Napoleon, they never personally met, but they still had interaction. Beethoven was completely mesmerized by this general who came from the island of Corsica as a corporal in the artillery, who rose through the ranks through his own merits and not through any kind of commission from a wealthy individual, and achieved power in this First Republic of France in the 1790s and proclaimed himself as first consul, first citizen of the Republic. And to Beethoven, that was an ideal. And then, of course, when he announced himself as Emperor of France, that's when Beethoven was extremely angry. And if you do look it up, you can see the title page with the dedication, and the page is ripped from where the quill pen is just angrily scratched across that dedication. So there is the idea of politics and music intertwined. There is the idea of not just a general being a hero, but the artist as hero. And this is the first hero symphony. The artist saying what is inside my mind and the struggles that I have to overcome are no different from the struggles of someone who has great visibility. The last movement of the symphony, many people feel that what it does is it showcases what we would call the apotheosis of the hero. Ooh, big word, apotheosis. What
that
means is we have the hero in a still photograph of him at the point of triumph. And it's a large movement that is a set of variations, and it showcases Beethoven's creativity. And so in many ways, that apotheosis or that still life of the hero in triumph is portrayed through his wonderful sense of varying material. And it's very heroic at the end of it.
Yeah, I've heard the movements described kind of as the first being the struggle, like you said, the second being death, the funeral aspect to it, the third being the rebirth, and that fourth being glorification.
Aha!
Yeah.
Yeah, that's much more succinct. Those are great ways to describe it.
Yeah. So it really is the story of this hero or this struggle and this...
Okay, that was so good, Javier, that you need to say that again.
I can't take credit for that one.
No, but tell me those four words again.
All right, so the first movement was, I believe, the struggle. Second being death. Third being the rebirth. And the fourth, glorification.
Okay, I had to take some notes.
Yeah.
Because actually I'm giving a talk about the symphony at the Music Academy on Thursday, November 13th, and it's at 6 o'clock. And if anybody wants to come, they're welcome to.
Yeah, absolutely.
There'll be light snacks. If you want to bring a bottle of wine, you're welcome to. We're not, encouraging people to go crazy. But what I'll be doing is talking about this symphony, but I'm going to steal those words.
Yes, please do.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, a little
shameless plug there. Absolutely. Check that out at the Music Academy. Mike will be leading that discussion. And that's a part of a new series of classes you're doing there. Almost classes,
yes.
Discussions.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there are plenty more of those to come as well.
Thank you. Yes.
Definitely check those out. But let's move along here.
Yeah.
And talk about the contrast. And Yaniv is very, very good at this, which I think a lot of people enjoy, is this contrast of these classics like Beethoven paired with newer works, something like the Sharon Farber, a living composer still. and finding those, the way they intertwine and creating this message from that music from so long ago to works that are coming out today and still very relevant. So the first half of the program is two newer pieces. The Elegy, which actually Yaniv commissioned. It's very much his vision, which is awesome. And like I mentioned, the Sharon Farber, which she is still a living composer. She's been sharing our Facebook posts about it. She's very excited that we're performing it. So let's talk a little bit about that, about the contrast of these classic Beethoven pieces versus these newer works and how they can intertwine and balance.
Before we start, please tell the audience, what is, again, the title of this concert?
Hope and Heroism.
Yes, so we've already covered the heroism, and in a certain way we've covered the hope, because with Beethoven's deafness, he was hoping to re-energize himself and double down on his creativity. The first half of the program, we start with Jonathan Leshnoff's piece called Elegy, and it's a 10-minute work written, I believe, in 2018?
Somewhere around there. I know it's recent, yeah.
Yes, yes. And commissioned by Yaniv. And briefly, what this piece is about is not just, the darkness of the word elegy, but what is important about this piece is that it takes us from darkness to light. And there are two themes in this piece that are intertwined, and it takes us from this, the sense of oppression, into a sense of hope. And so this piece is very strong. It's a beautiful work. Even though it's a new work, it's not something that anybody should be afraid of.
Yeah.
It's a piece that's very tonal. And so it's not meant as a funeral cortege. It's meant more as this is a point in which we start from, a point of oppression and a point of darkness, to a point of hope and light. And it does it successfully.
And then when we pair that with the Sharon Farber.
Yes.
This is a really special work because we'll have a guest soloist, Amit Peled, on cello, and this work also features an onstage narrator, which is kind of unique.
Yes.
You don't see that a lot. The way I've seen it described is the powerful storytelling of the narrator combined with the soulful voice of the cello creates this unique story that really speaks to people and creates this powerful, introspective work. So can you talk a little bit about that?
I'd be happy to.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful little YouTube clip that's only a couple minutes long, interviewing Sharon Farber following, I believe, the premiere of this work. And she talks about how important it was to have met the gentleman in question, Kurt Lowens.
Yeah.
I didn't know that he was from Germany. I always thought he was from Holland. But anyways, heroic effort of this young man. He was not very old.
He was a teenager, I think, when those events happened.
In Holland, to save the life not of just one, but of two airmen. And then over 150 Jewish children, to have been personally involved with the resistance movement and not be afraid and say, this is important for me in my life. And he did it not out of self-personification or self-glory or self-aggrandizement, but he just saw immediately this personal need and went out and filled the hole. He did receive an honor from all people, the President of the United States at that time, which was Eisenhower. And he was invited to come and live in Israel, and he said, no, I still have things that I need to do, even at that time in the 1950s, even after all of this. And he did settle in the United States, I believe on the West Coast, and Sharon Farber met him and was so moved by his actions and by his self-effacement, saying this is what needed to be done in the face of oppression.
Yeah, there's a couple of clips of him as well telling his story floating around the internet.
Really?
And I remember there was a clip I listened to, and he said, I could have faced the German army alone.
Yes.
Yeah, like that's the kind of person he was. And
yes.
Then he was very funny as well. And then he goes on and says, but it was nice to have the allies behind me, the ally armies behind me.
Javier, just imagine yourself being an 18-year-old and sticking up for that and doing that.
Yeah.
I'm totally amazed by that and moved by that. And it is that inspiration that we find this peace. And I think, I don't know for sure because I can't creep in inside her mind, the composer's mind, but the idea of narrator and cello makes the message even more powerful.
Yeah.
You know, Beethoven was one of the first ones to include voice in a symphony, in a symphonic work. And so in many ways, this is the same idea. Words are important, but if they don't inspire you enough, we had the solo cello.
Which that'll give you goosebumps.
Yes, yes. Now, the piece is described as four movements, and that should not scare an audience. The movements go, I believe, directly from one to another. So it's more about four different chapters in his story. And the piece as a whole is unified through the words of the narrator as well as the cello solo. And there's contrast between each of these sections. The piece, the cello part, is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, many of us believe that. And, of course, me being a cellist, I'm a little biased. But cello is closer to the human voice than any musical instrument.
I've heard that, yeah.
Every violinist will disagree with me on that. But that's their problem. The cello soloist that we have really is fantastic. Amit Palad. As a cellist, he is one of the top cellists in the world. As a conductor, he conducts various groups. Currently, he's with City Music in Cleveland. As a teacher at the Peabody Institute, one of the premier music conservatories in the world. And personally, I have been observing his short videos on Facebook. And as a cellist myself, he makes me think and rethink technique. So it's great for me to see an artist like this sharing his ideas and how he talks about them. And I'm looking forward to seeing him play. And then also, if I get a chance to talk to him, I'm going to ask him some questions about left arm technique. And that's really great because, as the great cellist Pablo Casals said, someone interviewed him when he was 90 and said, "Why are you still playing cello?" And his response was, "Because I think I'm getting better." Now, I'm not 90, but I really
always get better.
Yeah. It's always. Like, let's start the day out with scales. What? Playing scales? Yes. There's nothing better than just starting my day with cello technique. And so he's really, in many ways, kind of an all-around person, an all-around musician, not just a cellist, but as a person. And as an educator, yes, we're always trying to make better cellists, and it's kind of scary how good they are nowadays. They keep turning them out younger and younger and better, but the purpose is not to create a million fantastic cellists. The idea is to create a better human being through music and through the arts. And that's what always comes out to me when I hear him talk or I hear him play.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that, because he's very passionate about music education, about accessibility to education. I believe he runs a festival where it's allowing students to get a chance to play. They recently did a concert called, I think, Beethoven in Jeans. So opening up that accessibility to classical music. And I know you are also a huge proponent of that, being an educator yourself previously, teaching over at Rock Valley College, still teaching at the Music Academy. So there's a lot you have in common there.
Yes. And I have seen so many students in my life having taught for probably, 50 plus years, having cellists that have gone on to symphony work or to go into some kind of ancillary or music profession, like to be a librarian or as a conservatory teacher or as a music history teacher. I've had a lot of students go into music, but I've also had a lot of students that have gone into other subjects. And when I talk to them, they say that having the music lessons is such an important part of their lives. It makes them not only more of a humanist, understanding the human condition, but it also makes them understand the context in which they live. It is good that you're making people understand the world around them. The converse is true as well. My teacher and many other musicians that I know say, how can you understand the Dvorak cello concerto if you don't understand what was happening in the world, particularly in the United States in the 1890s? If you understand the context and you understand what Dvorak was going through in the 1890s, whether it was the world around him or the struggle financially that he was having because there was an economic downturn, or his personal life, which is really interesting. And I don't want to go, again, too far down the rabbit hole. So music can be micro as well as macro. And context, whether it's art, politics, economics, whatever, has a profound effect. And if we take a look at this program, that's what's happening here.
Yeah,
we're talking about despair and hope, darkness and light, in an arc that brings us to the Beethoven, which is the same story.
Which is why I love these podcasts.
Because
it's one thing, like you're mentioning now, it's one thing to hear the pieces and kind of explore that in the concert hall. But when you know the background to it, you know all the story, like you said, you know what Beethoven was going through when he wrote this, it just adds that extra layer of understanding that when you hear it, it clicks so much more.
Yes.
And you just feel it on a deeper level, I think.
Yes.
When you understand all the story behind it and all the context.
For me, I mean, I always enjoyed my cello lessons and I always enjoyed my cello studies. But for me, it was always, why did Beethoven write this? Why did Dvorak write this beautiful melody in the last movement? When you understand the context and you understand the micro, it just brings these pieces, as you're really saying, to a new level.
And it's harder now hearing the Beethoven Third Symphony as a revolutionary thing, where at its time it was. So we almost need that context to understand why was it such a revolutionary thing. Like you mentioned, double the length, where that now is common.
Yeah.
You'll commonly see a 40, 50-minute long symphony. But for the time, it was such a new thing. So when we understand the place where it was coming from, all of a sudden, it's like, okay, now this is why it was such a big deal.
In the first movement, I believe, in a standard first movement, there are typically three or four themes. There is an introductory theme, there is a secondary theme, which is meant as contrast, and then there is a closing theme, which tends to be a little more upbeat, martial in effect, lots of scales, lots of big bangs. But with Beethoven, with that sense of, I'm going to double down on my creativity, it's like the floodgates opened. And in that first part of the first symphony, instead of just one theme, I believe there are seven. And then when we get to the second theme, there are four, I believe. I could have my numbers wrong, but we're talking a lot of little themes that Beethoven is not just cramming in, but it's more a sense of opening up the floodgates. And then we have this really powerful closing section. And that all happens just in the first 5 minutes. It's like, what's happening here? What's going on here? This isn't right. And so if you were listening to that piece, if you were an aristocrat, you would be going, okay, here's first theme, here's second theme, here's closing theme. And I'm sure that they were lost completely.
Completely went away with it.
And it's like, okay, forget counting. Forget what Mike Beard just said. Just come and listen and be enveloped in sound, because the Rockford Symphony really is doing such a we have risen to really great levels here, and we're really sounding great. Come and enjoy just being enveloped in the sound of Beethoven, as well as the Leshnov and the Farber. I mean, because these, again, are telling the same story as Beethoven.
In a new way.
But in just in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm very excited for this performance.
Yes.
I think it's going to be great.
I am too.
Before we get there, though, there's actually a couple events leading up to that that I would like to talk about.
Yes.
The first being on November 4th. So this is a RSO ambassador exclusive, but I would like to mention that it's not hard to become an RSO ambassador. You just got to let us know. An RSO ambassador is anyone who would love to help us spread the message about our mission and what we're doing. So that could be as simple as hanging up a poster, sharing our Facebook event of the concert. There are no mandatory meetings, but there's great events like this, exclusive events where you get a chance to sit down with Mike Beard, for example, who's leading this one. And I believe you'll be leading them through a little bit of a cello demonstration, correct?
Right. Lately, people have been using the term petting zoo. And the idea of a petting zoo is to introduce physically these instruments and have people have a chance to try them and to observe someone play them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what my role in this is don't be afraid.
Yeah.
Here, take a look at this. You don't have to be a great artist. Just come. The idea is you too can make music.
Mm-hmm.
And at my work at the Music Academy, what I find is that I have adults that want to learn how to play the instrument. So music can be something fun.
Yeah. And I think it's relevant to everyone at all points.
Yes. In their life. Like Asal said at 90, why are you still practicing? Because I think I'm getting better.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
So you already mentioned with the Music Academy
yes.
that discussion you're leading, more getting a little bit more deeply into Beethoven.
Yeah.
So that'll be exciting. That's November 13th, correct?
It is the 13th at 6 o'clock
yes,
at the Music Academy. And if you go to Music Academy in Rockford, you can get more information.
Yeah. All right. And then November 14th. It's a busy week.
Yes.
November 14th, a Friday, Amit Palev will be here. And he'll start off his morning at the Rockford Public Library. We're very excited for this collaboration. Their main branch in downtown Rockford at 10 a.m., where he'll be leading a story time, actually, for young kids. So feel free to bring your grandkids or anyone who might be interested in this. So he's leading a story time. He's reading a book that's based about him. So it's really kind of interesting.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, he does some playing during his reading. So there'll be some cello interludes during the story. So it's really this kind of unique thing. And we're very excited to partner with the public library to offer that. It's a free event, 10 a.m. And then at noon, he will be at the Montesi Club for our sound bites. So that's another chance to get to hear from him. He'll sit down with Yaniv and they'll discuss this program even further. You'll get to hear a little bit more from Amit, his background, and what he's excited about to come in.
We're really fortunate to have someone of his caliber with us.
Yeah.
He's an amazing cellist and musician and human being.
The trifecta, right?
Yes, yes.
And then, of course, that all leads up to November 15th, 7:30 p.m. in the Coronado Theater, Hope and Heroism. We're very excited for that. So featuring Amit Palev on the Sharon Farber. And as well, I should also mention the narrator, Daniel Gale. He's a local cantor. So we're very excited to have him as well do the narration part for us. And of course, the Rockford Symphony Orchestra.
Yay.
Mike on stage. You'll see him as usual leading the cello section. So we're very excited for that. And a quick reminder, as we're talking about these opportunities, this music education, this story time at the library, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that youth tickets are free.
Yes. I think that's wonderful.
I agree.
Yes.
We're very excited to be able
and
to
I am too. Any time to play the Beethoven Third Symphony, it's a good day.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for sitting down with me and going
through
this podcast.
I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, thank you.